Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes, Caught Offside, just outside of New York City. I'm from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Enjoying the fake spring weather.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Spring. Sunday was unbelievable. It's unbelievable. This podcast is going to be unbelievable. I'm so intrigued because there were a lot of significant events that occurred over the weekend, some of which were controversial. And right before we started recording, you said to me, I think we're going to argue a lot on this podcast, I'm intrigued by you feeling that way because I think a lot of my thoughts that I have on some of these hot button things that we're going to discuss, I don't think that they're polarizing or controversial, but now you have me nervous for what's about to come.
But I also feel it's in the air. You know, we haven't had a heated argument in a while. We've been very convivial and very kind of friendly to each other.
Our Mourinho era, Mourinho at Tottenham, that era, the argument, I think it was too much. And I don't want to go back to that.
Yeah.
That was,
and I don't want to
every week.
I don't want to either because it's like it's rinse repeat. It was and it was me. I should have just stopped, refused. I think there was one point I said, I'm not talking about Mourinho anymore because I'd tell you the stuff and you go, look, it is what it is. And then I go online and, you know, because Mourinho does have a cult that surrounds him, very similar to Ronaldo and Messi. And then they'd have a go at me. And people say, you're just a hater. I'm like, no, it's just like, I can't take this guy going every club he goes to doing the same thing. And people are like analyzing it. We know what's coming. We know what's happening. It was me. Sometimes I just need to get off. You know me. I've got hobby horses about things.
You become relentless on certain issues.
Yeah. Yeah. I have. And there are certain areas where I'm trying to be better. So one of the areas where I've tried to be better is I was a horrendous music snob. Like, dreadful.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but, like, if someone likes something, well, I'd tell them it was bad.
That is such a...
I know. And it's... you know me. I'm generally a good person. I'm so...
Very.
In terms of being social. Like, I get on with people. I strike up conversations with strangers. And I like people. But I resolved to be better in that regard, and I am better. Like, and
But are you really better, or are you just outwardly making, like, inwardly, are you still like, that guy didn't
no.
taste. What a pathetic loser. Oh, good. You like that? Oh, okay, good for you.
No, because you see, you know, you just have to, like, one of my favorite bands is The National. Mm-hmm. So when The National did an album that featured Taylor Swift on it, my brain nearly exploded. Like, I was like, okay, all right, okay. And I gave one of the songs that they collaborated on a chance, and I enjoyed it and I liked it. And I just like it for what it is. Doesn't mean I have to like Taylor Swift's music or anything like that. But you know, I can just like that for what it is. And you know, I've got some kinks in my music listening. Like, you know, every now and again I'll be a bit of Slipknot in there. I mean, stuff like that.
Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and it's one of the areas, and football is an area I need to improve on as well.
Well, this should be interesting. So stay tuned, everybody, because I don't know where this is going to go. But let's start. I mean, a lot of important things happened in the Premier League over the weekend, so obviously we're going to start there. I should note, I don't want to belabor this and turn people off, but Arsenal haven't played yet when we're recording. So
yeah, so
you know,
it's important to say that because Arsenal fans, if you're not talking about Arsenal, especially if they play well, you suddenly get berated by them. And so we just make it clear.
I think that stuff like that is true for every club. I shouldn't say that.
I think they're super sensitive.
You're right. We don't hear very, like, I came to find out when we did our mailbag special that there were some Wolves fans who were like, hey, they were very polite about it. Hey, you guys mind talking about Wolves? So yes, there are certain clubs where like there are others where it's like, we played well and you're not going to acknowledge us. F you. Like that, there are certain clubs that are like
we have a group, I would say, Crystal Palace supporters, Southampton supporters when Southampton were in the Prem, Wolves supporters, Leeds supporters, and they're very good with us because they still listen to the podcast, even though we don't always talk about their teams that much.
Right.
They're very good with us. The Arsenal fans are the brat 3-year-old that has done a handstand and everybody must see it in the room.
Well, and here's what I'll say on their behalf. I do get it a little bit.
They're a big club.
They're a big club, but they also went through a decade in the wilderness, sort of like being a big club, but being a big club that had become a punching bag, kind of what United are right now.
Yeah, exactly.
In some ways. And so now that they're out of that, there is a mindset of, hey, we suffered through 10 years of being made fun of by everyone. We're really good and fun to watch now. Be nice to us and talk about us a lot.
So take a look at me now.
I think there is some of that. And by the way, United at some point will turn a corner, and I'm sure that we will get the same sort of treatment from their supporters.
Oh, United are unique, though. United are so big that when they're bad, they generate just as much headlines as when they'll eventually be good again.
Oh, yeah. There's a very Dallas Cowboys element in them. The Cowboys, in the way sports are covered here in the U.S., they're more interesting when they're terrible than when they're good.
Yes.
But let's use that and jump into the Manchester Derby from over the weekend. 3-1 the final. It goes to Manchester City. Boy, a couple spectacular goals in this game from Rashford and Foden.
I have to say, I enjoyed the Rashford one immensely. Now, I said things yesterday, hoping against hope. I was full Man United supporter yesterday.
Of course you were.
Tweeted out, come on, United. When Rashford's goal went, I went in, oh, bloody hell, come on, United. Like the whole thing. And I loved that goal. It's such a good goal because it just... It reminds me a little bit of what telepathy that Salah and Alisson had. Now it's not that driven side foot pass that Alisson does, but it's the same kind of idea. City are going to play a high line. Onana is going to kind of expose that, belting it long. I mean, Bruno Fernandes, as much as he annoys people who are United fans and non-United fans, where they'd be without him is absolutely terrifying. Terrifying. He was brilliant. He made so much of that ball and teased it up for Rashford. And Rashford just leathers it. Put your laces through it. Whacks it. What a goal. And it was just such a shock because it was this break from the smothering blanket of City possession. Mm. And it set the game up perfectly. Now, did the game... I enjoyed the game, but I mean... United then, there was only so much. The dam had to break. I did have a slight feeling that when Haaland missed that chance, did you get the feeling, it might be United's day if he's missing chances like
that? I didn't. And I mean, it's a Manchester City game where I'm going to use the same word we always use, but I did, even when they went down a goal, Haaland missed, Inevitability. That's still, it just exists when they play.
Yeah.
And it's what makes their losses fun because they're so unexpected because you're expecting them to win every time they play.
What did you think? What did you think of that miss? Like, why did
Collins
he miss?
It's one of the misses of the season. Why did he miss it? He clearly got underneath it too much.
Right. But I think it's like if you teed me up for an alley oop and I just went to smash it too hard and I catch a bit of the rim, you know, and it just bounces back.
I think
he's trying to roof it, like put it right up in because he's right under the crossbar with the chance. And he just gets it wrong. That's the only explanation that I would
maybe have to look at it again. There was part of me that when I saw it and when I saw the first replay, that it was kind of wondering, like, you know, is that diving header territory? Is the ball high enough where he could have gotten down to head that as opposed to trying to get his leg up?
But we know he likes bringing his feet up, though.
Yeah.
Oh, he's made a kind of a, I wouldn't say a calling card, but you remember that goal he scored last season where the cross is that little bit overhit and he's like, all right. And he's like, go gadget legs. And he just fires his legs at the ball and it goes in the top corner. So he does like doing that. I honestly think he was going for the spectacular, like to absolutely roof up, put the ball in up into the roof of the net, and he overcooked it.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought John Champion's call that was excellent. I mean, you talk about summing up the way everyone watching is feeling when he there's kind of a moment of silence, I think, after it happens. And then John Champion just goes, am I seeing things? did that guy really just miss that chance? It was really, really
Champion
good.
Is unintentionally funny.
I love that guy because
he goes right before the start of the game, he goes, and we've some rather disturbing news from the gantry here where we've seen things that you really shouldn't ever see at a football match. And he deadpans it. I'm like, what the F is he talking about? That's right, Rebecca. We've seen a half and half scarf. And it completely throws Rebecca. She's like, it goes back to Sudie and she's like, I must react jovially to this. It completely catches her off. You know, a half and half scarves. That's not what we want to see at a football. Because I honestly think she didn't know what he was going to say.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. as for other elements of this game, Phil Foden. Pep's, he scored twice in this. The first goal that he scored was spectacular. Pep said afterward, he is the player of the season with all the respect for incredible players, but no one has been so decisive for us as him this season.
Yeah. He's been brilliant for them. And
18 goals, 10 assists. I think it is now.
His like in a game where, and it speaks to what you always bang on about, with City is depth and other options and players that can lift the side when other players aren't functioning that well. I mean, that's as bad a game as you'll ever see from Kevin De Bruyne, and as poor and as bad a game as you see from Haaland. It's like with De Bruyne, it felt like he was forcing it, like he was which he never does. He's such a subtly gifted player, but like some of the shots he had were like so wayward and they were like shanks. So for Foden to be able to come in and be the key man and make things click is, he's very, very good. It's, if you remember a couple of years ago when he was in and out of the side and we'd say, well, he's young, you know, he's trying to find his way. Guardiola's not going to play him all the time. But there was a feeling like eventually he'll move from City. Eventually he'll be so good but not get enough games that he'll go somewhere else. But now he's a key man there. Yeah. And that kind of patience with him has been rewarded.
But it's all very fluid. You know, just ask Jack Grealish. This can change quickly. I
100%. That is something that ask Bernardo Silva. Remember there was a period where he was just out the team. But Bernardo Silva was two seasons ago. He's definitely going to be sold this summer. Definitely, he's gone.
Yeah.
Pep is capricious like that.
I mean, it's very fluid. They are very much a "what have you done for me lately" kind of team. And I guess in some ways that's what made them what makes them so great. On the depth thing, it's just very interesting. When you talk about, I think we're definitely in the midst of a Manchester City dynasty. And when you just think of different dynasties in sports, like when the Patriots had their dynasty, Tom Brady was they had one best player all throughout. Tom Brady was the best player throughout the entire dynasty. Mm-hmm. Jordan with the Bulls dynasty, you know, like this Manchester City dynasty, any given year, you identify a different best player. Like Pep just said, this year it's Foden. It's obviously been De Bruyne in the past. It was Haaland last season. Hell, JJ, Ruben Diaz won player of the year in 2021.
Right.
You know, so like, and you could even go back further. It was Yaya Toure one year. It's been Sergio Aguero. Vincent Kompany won player of the year in 2012. So like maybe soccer is more bred to be that way as opposed to some other sports, but it's an incredible thing that, I mean, yeah, De Bruyne has been a constant throughout most of this. He's the best Manchester City player I've ever seen, but man, it's every year you can identify a different best player of this run. It's crazy.
Yes. The way that, the Barcelona Brains Trust that was transplanted to Manchester have done this is to make sure they've got the best quality player that can fit in and function within what Guardiola wants. And it's impressive and depressing at the same time.
Sure. Just watching Foden, hearing Pep say that about him. I see these things and I can't help but be thinking ahead to the Euros this summer and just think about how England may very well have the La Liga player of the season. They might have the Premier League player of the season if Foden does continue like this. And they might have the Bundesliga player of the season, depending on where Harry Kane's goal totals wind up at. I mean, like, this is it has to be now, right? Like,
it's my worst nightmare coming through. So I had the exact same conversation with my friend Phil yesterday. And he's like, well, outside of France, who else can even get close to this? And he's in England.
But France is definitely good enough where, like, no one can be going for however great I think England could be. This might be the best England team we've ever seen. It could be that level. But right. For however great they are, France are absolutely good enough where you cannot go into the Euros and say that it's a foregone conclusion.
France
are right there.
Oh, I need them to be the best possible version of themselves that they can be. And this has to be stopped. I can't have it. I might go into exile. Like, I might do what one of those, you know, the survivalists, they go to like the mountains in Portland or outside of in Oregon and places like that and just like live off the land.
This would send you off the grid.
England winning a major tournament.
It would send you into that kind of tailspin that you would have to exit society.
Yes, I would have to leave society. All right. But before we've lost one society here, which is the Society of Manchester. We should return to this game, Andrew, because there was another actor involved that we need to talk about.
Oh?
We haven't even mentioned the team in red yet. We haven't even really
discussed.
Yeah,
I do have some thoughts.
We'll do the positives. Like, they hung in there. They definitely hung in there. And limited City for... They limited City at times to not a lot. They were very like compact. They were very organized. The stuff that we had seen, which was always unlikely to be seen against City, but the stuff that we had seen where, you know, Jamie Carragher did his bit of analysis last week and he's like, this is a massive box where the United midfield should be and it's just empty space. Remember me and you were saying about the Fulham game. How the hell are Fulham just running into acres of Old Trafford green grass and there's no one there except like a retreating Lindelof or whoever? That didn't happen. You know, they were good that way. They created problems. I honestly believe the Rashford was, apart from the goal, I thought he was desperate. Like, desperate.
Yeah, it was a weird game like that.
Yeah.
It's why I continue. I mean, I know you disagree with it somewhat, but it's why I continue to say that they'll go as he goes, because the goal that he scores, you see what his ceiling is, right. But that's the problem. If they're going to go as he goes, then there's a ceiling to what they can be because he's not consistent.
Did you read the Players Tribune piece from last week?
I did.
What was your thoughts?
Go on. It was fine. It was. I would say that there wasn't necessarily anything revelatory in there.
No. He definitely feels hard done by. His explanation over what happened in Belfast was not great. He was like, you know, sometimes it gets too much for me and I need to go away for a bit.
That was one thing. You definitely came away from it knowing that he hears the criticisms and, you know.
He definitely does. I don't think if it was an attempt to win back the supporters, the goal He couldn't have scripted it any better. Just couldn't have. It was amazing. But everything after that was so poor. The chance where he's put in behind and Walker is behind him and his first touch, his header.
Terrible. Takes him sideways.
Takes him actually back behind himself and Walker tidies up. Someone said he knew Walker was across his shoulder, so that kind of spooked him. Okay, fair enough.
Maybe.
But he's in one-on-one and he's good enough of a finisher for that to be 2-0. But the real chance was where McTominay was steaming through the middle. The ball comes across. It misses out McTominay. And he has a good bit to do, but for a top-class player, he ends up doing nothing. He kind of whiffs and shanks on it. United in that kind of stages, they did have something. If that goes 2-0, I'm still favoring City to come back.
Right.
But, it gives them a real platform. And yeah. I thought I do think they did as much as they could, but we need to talk about the manager a bit. The substitutions are being roundly criticised, and it was a white flag, taking out Garnacho and Manu for Forsen and Amrabat. Amrabat was disastrous.
Yeah.
Well,
the third goal, I mean.
Look,
he's played into a bit of a precarious situation.
Bad
but he
ball.
Made, yeah.
Who played that ball, by the way?
I don't remember.
Yeah, but
I just know it was taken off him very easily.
Yeah, it was taken off him very easily. But I agree with you that to flick a ball into that area like that at that height is asking for trouble. He's so far off being a Manchester United player. It's shocking. It's shocking, and that kind of leads me into Antony. So I've said it before in this podcast, John Giles. When he would do analysis of a manager, he'd say, "You judge a manager by the players he brings into the club. If we're judging Ten Hag by some of the players he's brought in, but specifically Antony, then it's over. Like the amount of money, the hype, he is tied to this player in a way that is a millstone. And it's such a he did nothing. Like he's a disaster for them. And
it's awful." I think to be the answer of the question of who was the worst signing in Premier League history, it probably takes a little bit more, probably takes a few more years than what we've gotten from Antony so far. But the fact that they spent what they did on him and that he's in the midst of a zero goal, zero assist season, and it's March, and you factor in his off the field issues as well, and what, and the hit that United has taken from that perspective too. I think even at this point, a year and a half, 2 years in, it's one of the worst signings. It's like a top three worst signing in the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are his guys. Amrabat, he pursued. Antony, he wanted at the club. Nowhere near it. And I don't think he'll be here for the start of next season. They're not going to sack him.
Ten Hag or Antony?
Ten Hag. And they're going to take a hit. United need to do really needs to be done. I read an article about Arsenal. So Arsenal took a financial hit. Remember, they were trying to clear out all these players. The Kolasinats, even Mesut Ozil, the Aubameyangs. Get rid. Pay out. Do what you got to do, but clean house. Take the hits. United have to do that on a number of players now.
Absolutely.
Just do that.
Yeah. And look, the other fact that this is like some of these other signings that we questioned, but like, remember, Mason Mount is on Manchester United. It's easy to forget. I mean, he's been hurt, but
$63 million worth of a Mason Mount.
Yeah. So like, who are the signings that have been hits for them? And we've gone over this, maybe Lisandro Martinez, but like people will point to Casemiro sometimes, but then other times you see why Real Madrid was cool with him leaving. Varane is kind of in that Casemiro school as well of like, yeah, sometimes he looks still pretty good. And other times I'm like, I see why Real Madrid were okay with him leaving. Like that's sort of like,
I think he's another disaster. Like his legs have gone, but he can still do certain roles, certain functions. Like he was, I think, was he all, I don't know. Is he all right yesterday, I suppose, for what that game was?
Yeah. And look, Onana has turned it around and is actually He's actually been
thought
very
he was good.
Yeah. Look, here's the one thing that I'll say for Manchester United. However one-sided this game felt, it was the 78th minute of a 1-1 game when Ederson is forced to dash off his line to challenge Garnacho from going in alone and nearly committed a penalty in the process. Like that was in the 78th minute of a tie game. So United were there, and then that goes against them. And it was great by Ederson. I don't think it was a penalty. I think he got to the ball first. Yeah, he cleaned out Garnacho a little bit, but there's nothing to me. There was nothing wrong with that. And then right after that, City go upfield, and Phil Foden gets his second, and it felt like that was it. And then they eventually go on and get the third from Holland. But it was 70.
I'm just rewatching Ederson and Garnacho.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm okay with it, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think there was... I think he beat him to the ball. And
I mean,
yeah,
of all Ederson's crimes, this is probably not the... Don't love it, but I get it, yeah.
So, okay. You know, so it was a little bit... Yeah, City were dominant in this game, but United were there. I don't know. And, like, I keep going back to the same thought on the last few pods since I've had my Manchester United awakening. But, like, you know, I heard Gary Neville say something like Manchester United are going to be like they have Manchester City over the weekend and they've got Liverpool twice in the coming weeks, once in the league, once in the FA Cup. And Gary Neville said something to the effect of like, these are the games where they'll be judged. And I'm kind of like, you know, I understand that from Gary Neville because he's still so used to like United being a certain thing. But we have to move off of that. Like Manchester City and Liverpool, when I look at that United team, these are not the games where I'm judging Manchester United. They're not in that class. They're just not.
Crazy that's a bit, but it's crazy for me. And again, it's...
Look at the team. They're nowhere near. They don't have anywhere near the talent that those teams have. They just don't.
That is a terrible admission of just the lack of care and thought that's gone into this side for the past decade.
Yeah, I mean, you want to judge them, you know, Villa, Spurs... You know, I mean, like judge them in those games. Like that's where they're closer to that.
I'm not. Right now. I am not comfortable with this conversation. I am not. It's too weird for me.
Well, this is what they are. I don't have any more on that game. Fun one, 3-1, Manchester City. They prevail in the derby. Let's go now to Liverpool. They do it again. They absolutely do it again. It's another stoppage time winner for Liverpool. Here's a trivia question, JJ.
Go on.
This was the latest match-winning goal ever scored by a Liverpool player, Darwin Nunez, in the Premier League. But it wasn't the latest goal ever scored by a Liverpool player in the Premier League. Or I should say since 06-07 when the exact times of goals became an official statistic. This was the latest match winner, but can you remember who actually scored a later goal?
Was Origi's later against Everton?
No.
Was Origi's against Wolves later?
No. It's incredible that Origi has like a catalog of dramatic goals that we can.
There's an obvious one I'm missing here. Jota against Spurs.
You're gonna have to go back further. It's not in the bloated stoppage time era.
Go on, tell me.
2011, Dirk Kuyt.
Dirk Kuyt.
Kuyt against Arsenal at 101 minutes and 48 seconds. So basically, in the 102nd minute of that game. Dirk Kuyt scored.
Wow,
that's their latest one. But this was the latest. That was the
penalty. I think it was the penalty against Arsenal, right?
It was against Arsenal. Yes,
it was at the Emirates, and Kenny Dalglish was manager, and it's a late penalty. It's definitely a penalty, but it's very very late, and if I might be getting this all wrong, and. I think Kuyt takes the penalty, scores, and then Penny goes to shake hands with Wenger, and Wenger's in, you know, Wenger in full strop complaint mode. You can see his shoulders, the arms are out like this, and Kenny goes, oh, f*** off, like that.
Yeah. So there you go. That one was later. And on top of that, another credit to Liverpool here. You know, JJ, this season, Liverpool subs have contributed to 43 goals this season, 21 goals, 22 assists from players off the bench. It's the most of any club in Europe's top five leagues.
Say that again. Read it again.
Liverpool substitutes have contributed to 43 goals this season. They've They've poured in 21 goals and 22 assists. That is the most of any club in Europe's top five leagues. And it is a testament to two things. One, incredible depth that they have, which we identified before the season. And two, it's a testament to Jurgen Klopp, who never pushes a wrong button.
No.
Like, we're just talking a minute ago about questioning Manchester United subs. Have we ever once done that on this podcast about substitution decisions made by Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool? Never.
No, we've criticized sometimes teams that he's played in competitions down the years, but we've never, like, we just haven't. And I maybe it was the Anfield Rap or some guys were talking about how good he's been this season with you know, changes with halftime, with his ability to get that extra mile out of the team. You're so right. Those stats are just amazing. Absolutely amazing. That goal as well, though. So I'm at the Munro. I'm watching the game. I'm having a Guinness Zero for once.
Wow.
Not bad. Not bad, I will say. Okay. You want them cold, like all non-alcoholic.
It feels like something you would scoff at.
Right. But no, I mean, not bad.
Okay.
Could be tweaked a little bit, but not bad. So I'm there.
Get in there. Change up the chemistry of it. Do your thing.
You know me. Always interfering with no knowledge or expertise. And the bar is full. Again, amazingly. Well, it's a run in.
Amazingly? It's Klopp's last season and they're leading the title race. Oh, I can't believe this place is full? What's going on here?
You're right. It's just so cool. Because I remember when it was Burke, Vanessa, Justin, and Steph. Like four of them. Like when things got really bad under Rodgers. What was I saying? So I'm there, I'm watching it, and I'm just getting agitated. And all I'm saying is, like, it just goes to show you, Klopp always goes, we stayed calm. And Pep says it too. Calmness in these moments is really important. The chimp in me, my chimp brain is, lash it into the box, hope for the best. But no, Alexis McAllister has the composure outside the box. Well, first of all, to win the ball back. I mean, we'll get to all that.
We sure will.
But Forrest should have cleared their lines. How many times could they have cleared their lines? Jesus, like. But he has the composure to turn and play at that moment, play the most delicate ball into the box. It's just so perfect. And in fairness to Nunes is better heading a ball that's behind him, where he's required to contort his neck backwards and flick it and almost score with his man bun than he is if the ball was straight in front of him onto his forehead. Like, it's such a good header and such a good goal. But it goes to show you, like, that bit of calmness, that bit of composure, so important, man. As much as you talk about substitutions, everything, stick to your principles. Now, here we get to the...
Well, hold on. We'll get to that. But I do want to talk about, while we're talking Darwin Nunez, and you're right, McAllister's ball in was brilliant and helped make that happen, certainly. But Darwin Nunez, JJ, is in the midst of continuing what is quickly becoming one of the most confusing seasons in the history of the Premier League. You know, he had to listen to chants all after he came on of, you're just an S Andy Carroll. Like, you know, that's how a lot of people view him.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, I know you've had your questions about him, but like, here we are in all competitions this season. This guy, he currently has 14 goals and 11 assists. In what world, for anyone else with those numbers, is that not considered a very good season?
Andy Carroll never got close to that.
He's got 14 goals and 11 assists, and it's March 4th. Like, is that, I mean, look, I'm not saying, and I have been a Darwin Nunez defender. I've been a Darwin Nunez defender for this whole season.
Yeah.
And, but it's not to say that I don't get it. Like, I do understand where the criticisms come from, because, you know, the problem is his XG. He underperforms his XG, which makes you think that he, as a goal scorer, like, that's not a good trait. And it's true. So he's currently 549th in goals minus XG in the Premier League, which is not good. He's at -3. But you know who's 548th? Erling Haaland. All right. And Bruno Fernandes is 550th. Darwin Nunez is sandwiched in between them. By the way, a guy that we never really hear this about, his own teammate, Luis Diaz, he's only a few spots ahead. He's ranked 544th.
Right.
All right.
But it was just so frustrating, because like there was a couple of times where he gets the ball wide in the left and he cuts in and he cuts in. You're like, pass the ball. Sure. And he waits and he shoots into a crowd. So, and 1v1, I still don't know what he's going to do. I don't. But.
Well, 14 goals and 11 assists tell you that he's probably going to do something that creates a positive moment.
By the way, what did you think when he kicks the electronic hoarding? I'm like, do you want to break your foot? Like, it reminded me of Tomori Kitsbaya.
He's not the first guy to do that.
No, Kitsbaya was the first one I ever saw do that. It was like, kick the hoarding at St. James's Park. Unbelievable finish. Unbelievable finish. And somebody recorded it on like a... What is Google Pixel is like a... I don't know, is it like a... Some kind of... Are they Google Glasses? I don't know what the hell it was. But they scored and Liverpool scored in the corner. They all run down into the corner. Virgil van Dijk, I think he grabs whatever device it is or who has it and brings it into the huddle with them where they're all just like celebrating. And you get these mad angles and a really close up of the epidermis of Darwin Nunez. It's I watched that video about maybe 50 times.
I can see that.
Naked.
See that. You could probably tell me where every mole on Darwin Nunez's body is located. Mm. All right. So without further ado, then we'll get to the part of the show that apparently is going to spawn some kind of debate between us. Right. So look, I'll go first and then you can tell me where I'm wrong here. Because I don't think any of what I'm about to say is controversial, but I can feel Liverpool fans arming themselves against anyone who is going to attempt to reduce the validity of this win.
Just deal with what happened.
Here's what I will say about the incident at the end of the game. Two things can be, and in this case are, true. Nottingham Forest absolutely blew this in that they had multiple chances to eliminate the danger by clearing the ball, something that they failed to do. That is true. Also true is that Liverpool were wrongly handed the opportunity for Nottingham Forest to even be in that situation in the first place. And that's okay to admit that. Like, it doesn't downplay the win or the success that Liverpool have had. Look, Liverpool, they were on the wrong end of some god-awful refereeing against Spurs. You were on the right end of some god-awful refereeing here against Forest. These things happen. So I don't see that as a controversial statement. Both of these things are true.
I'm happy to take that as my statement too.
So what were we going to disagree on?
I had a feeling you were. I don't know why I felt this way, but I felt you were going to channel those Nottingham Forest fans at the end of the game and just like freak out, typical big side bias, etc., etc.
No, that was never my thought. In fact, by the way, Nottingham Forest fans, I saw Men in Blazers tweet a video where Nottingham Forest fans are screaming at their own players to, quote, clear the ball.
Yeah.
So, like, they knew. Right. They knew, too.
Listen,
like,
it's a mistake.
They could have handled it.
It's a mistake by Tierney. It definitely is. But it does not mean that Liverpool should go down and score, down the other end and score. It shouldn't.
No.
Like I said, Forest were dribbling the ball out of their own box when Alexis McAllister took it. Clear the ball.
But the problem is at that stage in the game when we're dealing in, you know, seconds as opposed to like, you know, the middle of the game where something like that gets cut. Like Nottingham Forest being allowed to maintain possession there, getting it's a weird call to miss because it was so clear.
But he did it in the first half too. He made a mistake with a drop ball in the first half too.
But like,
and I don't know, but why can't someone just get in his ear and go, Paul? Quickly get in his ear, Paul. That's
I don't know. Why
wouldn't you do that? Why have we all this technology that slows everything up, but nobody can just quickly get in his ear and say, Paul's going the other way, mate. Oh yeah, fine, corrected, done.
I mean, I don't know. I can't answer that. We talked about this when the Diaz Spurs incident initially occurred. But just like the problem here is that like when you're dealing with such a finite, short amount of time at the end of the game, it's not unreasonable to say that if Forest are allowed to get the drop ball there, there's a chance Liverpool don't attack again.
But
like that's possible. The goal happened a minute 50 seconds later. Like,
I think the best team in England are one of the top two teams in England is going to attack again. I think that is the likelihood.
There's only 2 minutes left in the game.
I know, but there was...
So like,
but
it's like, hard to know. It's possible.
I just cannot, like, if that had gone against me, I would not, I like, it's tough for Forest because they're down there, they're fighting, they're scrapping away, and I understand that things go against you. But, like, you know, this is a mistake by the referee. It's not some kind of deliberate act of cheating by either the referee or Liverpool Football Club. It's a mistake. It does not mean there should be a goal. These things happen or used to happen all the time in football, and we got on with our lives.
That's not true. I don't believe that that's true.
Oh, we did.
We did not. You say that all the time. I disagree with.
The fume is so much worse. And I partly blame Liverpool, and I blame Arsenal for it too. So you have Mark Clattenburg, who is now the Nottingham Forest referees analyst or rules analyst. He's been interviewed after the game. Like, this is unbelievable. This is Mark Clattenburg, a former Premier League, fairly recent UEFA referee, in the past decade, Premier League referee, undermining the officials on the behest of a billionaire owner who is upset because something didn't go his way. This is a crazy scenario. And it does go back to what happened with Liverpool's strongly worded statement. Remember that after Tottenham? I don't have it in front of me, but there was this and we will assess what action we will take. You know, sure. This kind of stuff. A mistake was made there too. It was not deliberate.
And Mikel Arteta's rant after the Newcastle game.
His letter after
when
Newcastle
game. When he was wrong, by the way.
But this stuff drives fans, and it's driving this, and it's undermining officials, and it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. And Mark Clattenburg's made up position to placate a billionaire is embarrassing. And we'll have a listen to what Clattenburg's job is, his role is.
What are you doing on behalf of the club in this situation?
I'm here to advise the club, and certainly because, for example, this is a matter of law, so therefore I can explain the matter of law. So that's what I'm there for, to advise the board, the football club. I haven't spoken to the referee. I leave that to the officials of Nottingham Forest to do. The owner's quite upset because they fought. You know, he's invested a lot of money in the football club and he wants to see results.
The owner's upset. He's put a lot of money into the football. That's what owners do. They put money into football. And if you see the haphazard way in which he's done it, that's his own fault. Also, you're signing Iwonyi. The chances he had. Like, Forrest had chances before that, never took them. Like, if it's all just about, if we're all just going to focus on the mistakes of the referees and not talk about the million other things that happen in a football game, as was pointed out by Jonathan Wilson on the Guardian Football Weekly, you know, this is the state of the game. This is how we end up in this. And it's honestly, I get why Forrest fans are upset. That's not the reason they lost the game, and it won't be the reason they'll be relegated.
Well, we'll see about that.
It's not the reason, Andrew.
That they'll be relegated?
It won't be the reason they'll go down, losing that game.
No, but look, it is... Here, I guess one area where I will disagree with you a little bit is I feel like you're almost painting this as non-controversial. When something like this happens right at the end of the game,
it is
controversial.
It's a mistake. We know what happened.
But when I say it's controversial, I do mean that it does impact the potential outcome of the game. Like, I don't think that's a controversial thing for me to say.
Which was more impactful, the Forest player trying to dribble out of the box, or what happened?
I have them on a similar level. That's why I said both things are true. Yeah. Both things had a significant impact on the outcome of this game. Forest not clearing their zone was terrible and could have happened multiple times. And Paul Tierney giving the ball to Liverpool inexplicably with under 2 minutes to play was also terrible and had an impact potentially on the end of the game.
But like, things get missed in games. You know, they just do.
I know, but when it happens in the final 2 minutes, it's magnified.
But what about two penalty incidents? The first one, Jadon Dans hauled to the ground. And then I think it was Omobamadele hauled to the ground in the opposition box by Gomez. Both of those could have been given penalties. Tierney didn't look at them.
But this is a law that he is objectively, like, a penalty, whether it is or isn't, you can disagree, but it's subjective. This guy made an inexplicable mistake.
But if we want to go further down this road, he did make a mistake. It was probably also a mistake that, was it Yates crashed into, had his foot up on Kelleher, or on Konate and Kelleher. Like, that could easily, it could have easily just been a free out for Liverpool and they'd still have the ball. I honestly, like, these things, maybe it's me, maybe it's the era I grew up in, but these things happened all the time and the game moved on.
You are wrong about that. You've said that time and time again, and I've never stopped you, but that is not true.
It's improvable.
Referee mistakes have been talked about for certainly as long as I've watched this sport. It's partially why we got into a VAR era, because people couldn't take it anymore with mistakes.
But we're talking.
They've always been talked about and emphasized after games.
But we're talking about this error like it's Maradona on Shilton. That's the way it's being discussed.
No, that's not true.
Oh, Jesus.
This is the day after, all right? For 24 hours, it's going to be a big part of the news cycle. Liverpool are in a title race. Like,
yeah,
a controversial decision at the end of a game that may have had an impact on the result. When a team is in a title race and the other one is trying to fend off relegation, you got to give this a day and a half where people are going to talk about it. It's not unreasonable.
I will go back to what you said. I think both things are true. I would side more on the side that, like, there was, I don't believe this. So much happened in between Paul Tierney's error and the goal that I just, yeah, I don't know. That's where I am. And I'd feel the same if it went against Liverpool. I honestly would. And you know, part of it is I'm sick of talking about this on the podcast. Part of it is when I watch a game now, I'm like, we're going to have to do this again on the podcast, regardless of what game it's in, whether it's Liverpool or anybody else. That's it.
Look, we've brushed over some. And by the way, I've seen people criticize us. What was it? There was one a couple of weeks ago that people were like, I can't believe they didn't address.
Yeah, it was one. It was last week. I can't remember what it was. But it was the
offside. Yeah, the.
But that was done today.
Yeah. This one was, how are you not going to talk about it? It's the biggest
story
in the sport right now, potentially.
I'm trying to get into the headspace where if it went the other way, where I wouldn't be, well, why didn't that Liverpool player clear their lines? You know, especially the fact there was a corner in between that. There was just so many different potential phases of play. Hmm. That's it. And I'm going to get ruined for this. Absolutely ruined. The City fans and Arsenal took that very, very badly on Saturday. Very, very badly indeed. And I'm going to hear from them, but whatever.
Let's continue. We'll move off of this. And a couple other Premier League notes. Don't have too much on these, but battle for top four or top five. I think we have to start wrapping our, like, it's so, inherently, we just think of it as the top four is where you want to be. But with the new Champions League format, it's probable that the Premier League is going to get a fifth slot into the Champions League. So either way, top four, top five, whatever you want to call it. Tottenham come from behind. They knock off Crystal Palace.
3-1. And Timo Werner scores.
Timo Werner, he kind of had the anti-Rashford game. Like, if you completely flipped those two games, like, Rashford scored a brilliant goal early and then didn't, and then was pretty bad after. Werner had the chance one-on-one with the keeper and allowed Johnston to kind of smother it. You know, Werner probably should have taken it earlier, but he took an extra touch. And then the rest of the game, he was awesome and wound up scoring his first goal for Tottenham. He's been a nice signing. Right now, when I look at Tottenham signings from the summer up through January, they've done a pretty good job. You know, Werner has been a positive. Brennan Johnson set that up. He's come on in the last couple of weeks and been really good for them. I mean, God, Mickey van de Ven, you know, I know he had that long spell out on the sidelines, but he's one of Tottenham's most important players with the way they play with that high line. You got to have a guy like him on the team. He was incredible in this game. I mean, they've done really well over the last couple transfer windows, I think you'd have to say.
I wanted to just say that where you've been good on Werner's, your expectations were different. You just accepted you just accepted he's not going to score a ton of goals, but that he can aid the team in another way. And I think that's probably the way Ange wanted the fans to view it.
Yeah, and he's doing that so far, and he's going to have to continue because, unfortunately, Richarlison is going to be out for a little bit. A guy who, I mean, what was he hitting, like 9 goals in his last 10 games or something? It's too bad because he's in certainly his best form as a member of Tottenham, but now he'll have to see if he can find that when he comes back. Aside from something off of this game, but just something that I found kind of funny, JJ, that I wanted to mention to you. So we're in this era where if you polled managers, especially managers of top clubs in England, if you polled them of like what their biggest problem is with today's game, they pretty much all, it feels like, have the same answer of there's too many games. You know, how can I manage this schedule? There's too many games. They all feel that way. So, JJ, so if Spurs qualify for the Champions League and have those extra games next season, I want you to hold on to this quote from Ange and remind me of it in case it comes up again next season. So he was asked if he preferred Tottenham to have had more matches this year. Because when it's all said and done, their season this year is going to be only 41 games because of how quickly they went out in both cups. It's their fewest in like 20 years. But his answer was, would you like to have had more games? He said, definitely, yes. Because for us, a club like us who want to compete at the highest level against the best, you need a strong squad. And to have a strong squad, you need consistent games and opportunities. At the moment, if we get an injury, then we're liable to throw somebody who hasn't played for 4 or 5 weeks. It's not easy on that player. Whereas if you've got games, there's a natural rotation that you need to make all the time and also gives you a little bit of rhythm. I had the other extreme last year of 60 plus games at Celtic, but I found that a lot easier to manage than having less games or having a disrupted season like we've had this year.
Mm. Ange, the games were a lot easier last season too. Your league games were, you were almost expected to win every one.
Right.
So that's a difference too. This could be one of those where
we're going to hold on to this one.
Yeah. And next season they'll go, just so many games.
It's unmanageable. I don't know how we're supposed to do this, mate.
Yeah, mate.
So we'll see. I'm just going to we're going to hang on to that one and we're going to monitor.
Been in that one.
Yeah. Aston Villa, JJ, to get a late winner from Luca Dean to keep the gap at 5 points. Tottenham do have a match at hand between fourth and fifth. Ollie Watkins, he scored twice in this one. Quietly, maybe you could say, putting together an unbelievable season. I was watching the Lowdown, JJ, where Rebecca Lowe, she's kind of given a bunch of like rapid fire topics.
Right.
And one of them was, who's your player of the season? And both her and Tim Howard, they both said Ollie Watkins.
He's been excellent.
Yeah.
He's been really, really good. But I guess because he's doing it at Aston Villa, we probably should be talking more about it, like, in terms of England, but we don't, like, do you ever hear him mentioned? Like,
well, he'll be on the team, but the problem is he plays the same position as Harry Kane, and it's just hard to unseat that player.
But surely he'd be, if you're looking to change things, he'd be the first guy you'd bring in terms of his form anyway. If that's, Southgate doesn't really operate like that.
I don't know. I mean, look, Kane's going to score what, like 30 plus goals in the Bundesliga this season. I mean, I don't think you can take him out.
You know the way I spoke about Darwin Nunes when he's one-on-one, and I don't know what's going to happen. Ollie Watkins is the opposite to that. Like, I kind of know how he's going to, more or less how he's going to finish. Open his body out, slot it into the corner.
I would say, I mean, most really good strikers, you feel when they're one-on-one with the keeper, I know Son, when he had his chance late in Tottenham's game, like, you know he's going to score that.
But there are some...
Feel that way about Salah.
There are some players for whom it feels like too much time. But and I forget, Ollie Watkins is 28 now.
Yeah, he's not a young player.
No, but
he's in thick of his prime. This is what he should be doing, I guess.
Yeah, 16 goals in 27 matches, 10 assists. Probably should be talking more about him, really.
Absolutely. He's been great. In a season where Villa have been excellent.
Villa, like, what Emery has done such a great job there.
Yeah.
He really has. Yeah. And I'm with a lot of players that we're always looking to beat Steven Gerrard up, but, like, again, how about coaching? Mm-hmm. What's that quote about... Someone famous in the acting community, and a guy asked, you know, well, how, you know, what's your system? What's your method? And he goes, well, why don't you try acting? Just like that. And like Emery's come in with those players, and that's what he's done. He's coached them.
Look, I don't want to use this as a way to belittle other managers who are world class.
Please do.
But I have so much more respect for this than like an Antonio Conte who walks into a club and immediately is complaining, well, I don't have good enough players.
Right.
And then they
go
out and spend all this money. Well, and then a few months later, I don't have good enough players. Coach the damn players that make these guys better. Like, you think you're a world-class manager? Make the guys on this team better. And you're right. Emery has, like, everybody on that team is better than whatever he got. Now, we knew Villa could be good, but they're fourth. Villa are fourth right now.
This has been just a brilliant season for them.
Yeah.
And you look at someone like John McGinn, you wondered about McGinn at this level when he was playing for Gerrard, and now you've absolutely no questions about it. He's a Premier League footballer. Look where he is. And Yeah, it's just yeah.
Now look, it's not to say that Villa didn't make sign, like Pau Torres was an important signing, but you know why they signed him? Because that guy was desperate to play for this manager again. So like, yeah, all props to Unai Emery. Probably my leader in the clubhouse for manager of the season. I'd have to give that more thought maybe, but yeah, Villa. But it's a huge win for them to get that late goal and keep that leg up on top four. Conversely, it's a devastating defeat for Luton. And I was just looking at it because that happened. And I was kind of like starting to think like, boy, it feels like that's happened to them a lot. And so I went back and JJ, just looking at some of like, you know, it's Luton Town. And like, you don't expect them to play well against some of the bigger clubs in England. But looking at some of their defeats to big English clubs,
yeah,
they had this one where they lost in the 89th minute to Villa. Newcastle, remember, they threw away a 2-goal lead. They were up 4-2, wound up 4-4 with Newcastle scoring in the 67th and 73rd. Arsenal, you had the Declan Rice goal in the 97th minute. Liverpool, they had the win and it wound up being a draw when Liverpool scored in the 95th minute. I mean, they have had some devastating games go from win to draw or draw to loss. And it's, you know, again, it's fine margins at that end of the table. And any one or two of those going differently, oh, what it could have meant for them.
I mean, if we're going to talk about doing more with less, Rob Edwards should probably get a shout there. You know,
yeah,
4-3 that game was with Arsenal.
Yeah.
He's done a tremendous job as well. I just feel bad that, you know, we thought we'd ever... I really feel they're going to go down now. And, like, Forest should just have enough. There's a four-point gap now.
Well, part of it is also the other team, Everton, who lose again. They don't win anymore.
No.
They've stopped winning. They're 16th. I mean, the question mark, the elephant in the room is they're still awaiting a potential points deduction. So it's hard to analyze what the bottom of the table looks like while that's just sitting out there. Forest too, both of them.
Why do I feel that the points deduction that they've had, that'll be it? They'll just leave it at that.
I don't know. I mean, I can't say I have a feeling one way or another. Hmm. If it was 6 points, why is it not? If you do the same crime again, I don't know. I don't know, but I'm also not a lawyer that knows how to or litigate these things. So
Dyche is very frustrated. And he's frustrated with the XG. You can't say every week about XG because it's through the roof again. You have to go and score a goal. I'm frustrated because we're doing good stuff.
Yeah, he's not wrong, but like, before, when I went through the goals minus XG category and Darwin Nunez was near the bottom, one of the
Calvert-Lewin is at the bottom, right?
He's like literally at the bottom, Calvert-Lewin. So, I mean, some of it is your own players maybe need to improve their finishing a little bit. But
Most wasteful Premier League teams, Everton top the table, then it's Brentford, Chelsea, Man United, and Bournemouth. That's on the BBC.
Yeah, there you go. Let's see, JJ, we'll leave the Premier League now. A couple other things from around Europe that we wanted to mention, starting in Spain, where Real Madrid thought they had overcome a 2-goal deficit to come back and beat Valencia. They thought it was 3-2, but alas, they did not. As Jude Bellingham scored as time expired, basically.
No.
Close.
The whistle is gone, right?
It has.
But the referee's got to be clever. He's got to be cute for the sake of a millisecond, a half a second. When that ball is cleared, blow the whistle. You cannot blow the whistle when the ball goes back into the box.
That's the thing. So the thought process on this controversy was that he was going to allow the corner to be taken and then the game would end. So that happened. He should have ended it immediately. But then Brahim Diaz gets on the ball and turns the corner. And he's allowed to do those things. The whistle hasn't gone yet.
Right.
So if once you've allowed Brahim Diaz to continue the phase of play, then you have to see it to its conclusion, I would think.
I totally agree.
So it's kind of a mess of the referee's own making. If he just said, I'm ending this when the corner happens, then that's it. But he let it go just long enough that it's like, well, what was the point of allowing Diaz to get on the ball and turn the corner and play him the cross?
It was never a written rule, but I always remember that the ref, when time had expired, if you were about to cross the ball in, the ref would let that last attack happen, and when the ball is cleared, then blow the whistle. That always seemed to be the way. You'd see the clock on TV, and you kind of felt you knew what the referee was doing, and this guy just completely gets it wrong.
Yeah.
Now, I'd be scared by that crowd in the Mestalla too, but...
But then just blow it right after the corner. I don't know. I think he mishandled this. I really do. He blows it as Diaz is like cocking back to release the ball into the box.
This does not need to be a thing. He could have saved himself so much hassle, and no one is going to quibble over the couple of seconds.
Now, I'm not saying these things happen enough where I feel a rule change is
something needs to be done.
Right. I'm not doing that. However, The Athletic, a publication who we have a high degree of respect for, Jacob Whitehead of The Athletic wrote a piece about it after this game where he suggests it does something need to be done to add a little more definitiveness to what is right now the most important and most vague element of a soccer match, which is when it ends. And so he writes this, tell me what you think. He says, one simple tweak could help. During stoppage time, the referee could switch to a stopped clock system and blow up exactly on the minute. For example, if a team scores after the referee has signaled there would be 4 minutes of stoppage time, the referee could stop time before restarting when the ball is in play and blow up exactly on 94 minutes. Professional stadiums all have clocks displaying the exact time so players can remain aware. It gives the law objectivity, allows for post-90th minute stoppages, and by only being implemented in stoppage time means games will not take over 2 hours to complete. It is not a complete novelty to the sport. Futsal already has a designated timekeeper and a strict full-time whistle. So he's saying once you get to like during the game, you don't need to stop the clock on when the ball's out of play. Otherwise the games will go on forever. Cause the studies say that the ball's in play for only 55 minutes. So we're going to have like 30 minutes of stoppage time, but he's saying once you get to stoppage time,
okay,
then you can go to the stop clock method and stop clock. And it would only add on, you know, another couple minutes potentially, but it would minimize the controversy because when it gets to zero, wherever the play is, it's zero.
My brain hurts. I don't think
it's crazy.
Okay, I'll go with it. Whatever. I mean, I just don't think it's a big enough of an issue. This was just a complete dog's dinner that the referee made, all of his own making. Didn't have to be like this. Could easily have been solved.
By the way, I think the referee made this situation even worse. Gil Manzano, you cannot give Jude Bellingham a red card for him running over and shouting, it's an effing goal, after something like that. Mm-hmm. You can't give him a straight red for
profanity.
That.
Look, we don't like profanity on this podcast. You don't.
But no, I know. I have my reasons for that, which I think if I ever explain them to people why I do that, I think people would be okay with it. But like if Bellingham runs over in that moment to the ref and says, you're an effing cheat or you're effing S, like that's another story. You are cursing and belittling the ref, but just saying it's an effing goal, that is not worthy of a straight red. No. And I really hope, as the newfound Real Madrid supporter that I am,
huge. This is the Real Madrid section sponsored by
that red card. That straight red has got to get rescinded. That's ridiculous to me.
I'm okay.
Come on.
Do you know what? It was a great reminder of what an atmosphere when Valencia went 2-0 up. It was a reminder because I guess they're not in the Champions League. They're a team that I guess people have forgotten about after their early 2000s high points. But that stadium is just amazing and so noisy and loud. But
it can be.
I know. The minute I said that, I saw how Vinny Jr. like was celebrating so hard, and I'm like, was he racially abused here last year? Of course he was.
He sure as hell was. I mean, they're more than any place. Like that's the place where players are all like, oh yeah, Valencia. Vinny scored twice, which I'm sure felt amazing for him. Yeah. And after, I think it was after the first goal, he ran back and held the ball in his arm and held up his fist, kind of a la Giancarlo's Tommy Smith. from the Mexico City Olympics. I mean, it was, and the fans were not, I mean, Valencia fans didn't take kindly to it.
Good, good.
I can't sit here and tell you what they were saying. I don't know. But
I'm sure it wasn't nice.
Yeah. But I'm sure that that had to feel really good for Vinicius. And I just love that. I love that there's this refusal to back down from them. That like no. He only feels stronger to kind of stand up for himself.
He's absolutely.
I love it. I just love that guy.
He's absolutely dead right. It's just, you know, again, maybe it sounds like me. Oh, no, this social issue is getting in the way of my enjoyment. Maybe I sound like a brat. But it was like when Valencia went 2-0 up, it was like, oh, that's great. That's brilliant. You hear that stadium? Oh, yeah, they're racist.
Yeah. I mean, but you're right. The atmosphere there was unbelievable. But I don't know. You don't know what they're saying, unfortunately. One other note on Real Madrid. Sounds like they're closing in on Alphonso Davies joining in the summer from Bayern. And then off of that, I saw this quote from Carlo Ancelotti. Fabrizio Romano tweeted it. Ancelotti on Alphonso Davies' deal and potential new left back joining Real Madrid. Quote, we trust Ferland Mendy. Same for Fran Garcia. Stop there, Carlo. But he continued by saying, we are okay with these players as of now.
Oh, my God. It's like,
imagine being poor Ferland Mendy, who's been at the club for a while now.
Yeah.
And that's as you're hearing all these rumors swirling, I think Alphonso Davies going to take my place here on this team? Like, I don't know. Maybe my manager, like, I've been here for a while. Maybe my manager's has my back. Let's see what he says. I'm okay with you for now.
For now is the thing.
By the way, and Fran Garcia too, who, by the way, in stoppage time of this game had a huge defensive play. When initially a penalty was called against Real Madrid, it looked like a penalty, but you could see on the replay, Garcia had come in and nicked the ball away. It was totally clean. Good use of VAR. Certainly was. And Real Madrid 2-2, the final there, and a lot going on at the end of that game. That was some game.
Was the Real Madrid Hour brought to you by Andrew Gundling.
You know, if we did that, you make fun of me. If we did that, this pod would be all right. It's probably one of the most supported teams on earth.
Oh, I know. It'd be fine. I'm just excited for the conversation we're going to have after the break.
So we'll go ahead.
I don't know which way this is going to go.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead. We'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side. And JJ has some thoughts on the bizarre scenes that occurred at Darmstadt over the weekend in the Bundesliga. So stay tuned for that. And of course, we're going to get out of here without discussing Inter Miami winning 5-0 and Luis Suarez scoring a couple goals. So that as well, U.S. women's stuff in the Gold Cup, and a couple guys I wanted to mention for the U.S. men's national team who are starting to really emerge. A lot more Caught Offside still to come. Don't go anywhere.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. JJ, we saw something over the weekend in Germany.
Yeah.
That pops up from time to time. We saw it with Borussia Dortmund in the not-too-distant past when the performance of the team elicits a reaction from the fans that goes from just like it's where they basically address the team and the players listen. That happened. So Darmstadt, they're currently bottom of the table in the Bundesliga. They lost 6-0 to Augsburg over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And upon the conclusion of the match, it was that scene, but almost on steroids. Instead of the team kind of going over to the supporters and hearing from them, a member, I don't know if he's an ultra. I don't know what he was, but a fan essentially comes from out of the stands onto the field. This right. is all allowed to happen.
No, it's a traditional occurrence at the club.
And the team basically huddles around him while he, I mean, go watch the video. I don't know what he's saying, but based on body language, doesn't look like anything nice. He's berating this team right. after the 6-0 loss to Augsburg.
Now, we should say that their goalkeeper said there were clear and unambiguous words, but it wasn't aggressive at all. That was completely fine, goalkeeper Marcel Schoen said. After a defeat like that, we didn't deserve that much respect from people. They could have thrown things at us and insulted us. I would have put up with that all that because we weren't worthy of wearing this shirt today.
Wow.
Now,
but by the way, we should know it was 5-0 29 minutes into the game.
Like Christ, you know. We should note they weren't violent though. So I thought because it looked aggressive, I said I was conflicted about it. I'm not conflicted anymore.
Okay.
I don't see what, like this was an organized thing. It wasn't like there was players going to their cars in the parking lot and then all, you know, they were descended upon by ultras. That it was nothing like that. It was organized. It was arranged. A fan comes down who is representing the whole stand. By the way, what a view in that stand. Like, those ultras are unbelievable. What an atmosphere they were given. And he's addressing the issues. I'm fine with it. I actually think it's good. Like, right. we're always talking about how, in American sports in particular, but in the Premier League, increasingly, the connections between these community clubs, that's where they started, and the supporters and the players and the supporters, is just the separation is gone, you know? And in Germany, they have 50+1. Like, the fans have an active role. We all remember the Bayern Munich AGM where the fans were just protested and were upset about the Qatar links, the Qatar sponsorships for Bayern Munich. And it was the fans effectively that got rid of those. That made the board act. Mm-hmm. So it's not nameless, faceless billionaires in their condos in Florida running the show. These people are held to account. And the players are held to account too. I mean, players come and go. Those fans will be there forever. And their supportership has come down through the generations. I think I think it's a brilliant thing that there's that communication. As long as it's not violent. And this wasn't violent. This was a fella... As the goalkeeper said, they were clear and unambiguous words. It wasn't aggressive at all. That was completely fine. What's wrong with that?
So here's what I have done. I have, not too in-depth, but I've broken this down into two parts. What I like about it and what I do not like about it.
Okay.
Specific to this situation. I'll start with what I don't like. JJ Darmstadt were just promoted this year.
Right.
They were in two Bundesliga for the previous 6 years. By the way, they were in the third tier as late as 2014. And like, they haven't won a game since beating the same Augsburg side on October 7th. So I understand there being frustration. Yeah. But a couple things, though, like, it's not like they're getting smashed every week. So their previous six matches, the results were 1-1 draw versus Bremen, 2-1 loss to Stuttgart, 0-0 draw versus Gladbach, 2-0 loss to Leverkusen, who everyone loses to, a 1-0 loss to Union Berlin, and a 2-2 draw with Frankfurt. Like, they were only just promoted. They're obviously not a good team. They're not embarrassing themselves. Yeah, on this day, they did. They had nothing. But bad teams, over the course of a season, are going to have these days.
Right.
So, like, I'm generally okay with the act. But I'm just wondering, like... Or, you know, when I used to,
but that's a different question. That's a question of expectations. Like, what do they expect?
I'm just wondering, was this harsh to do that to this team that is just, they're not good enough? It's like, yeah, on that day, their effort wasn't there. They were bad and they had poor effort, and that's why. But it's like, that's going to happen to the worst teams in leagues.
Like, I just feel like, I know. And Darmstadt aren't a good example of this because, like you said, they're a small club. I mean, one of our listeners, the listeners are the people on Twitter really disappointed me with their reactions. They're like, oh, look how entitled the fans are. Oh, like they're entitled to the players that are members of their club putting in an effort on the field. That's what they're entitled to.
Right. I guess my thing is like...
But someone said, Oh, if I was them, I'd just be there, stood there thinking about all the money I'm making while that guy berated me. Like, as if, look how much better, like, you can shout all you want, I'm still taking all this money. Like, and I can guarantee you those Darmstadt players aren't on huge wages at all. Comparative to like the other teams, they're definitely
they're top flight German players, so they're making a good living. But yeah,
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure they are. And is what's wrong with being reminded of that? And that you play for the club, and we are who you play for.
Yeah,
let me tell you, it works the other way, Andrew. When players are trying to sell merchandise and hawk NFTs and get you to buy their leisure wear or whatever the hell it is. They're happy to talk about the connection with fans and use their profile that way. So, like, I don't mind a bit of it going the other way.
Right.
Go on with your
No, my thing is just essentially, like, when it happens to Dortmund in that season, I get it because, like, things were not aligning here. Dortmund is a great club. They're a Champions League club. Like, their performances were awful. I just don't know what are Darmstadt supposed to do? Like, when I produced the Michael Kay show, Michael used to always have this line about teams or players that just can't do something. And he's like, it's like in gym class, the gym teacher demanding the fat kid climb the rope. Come on, climb the rope. Get up there. Climb. Like sometimes you just can't do it. Like, what are you? You can yell at him all day. Like, I don't know. I mean, look, we'll see. Maybe Darmstadt, if they go on some kind of run now, we'll look back on this and maybe feel differently. But I think it's you're berating a bad team. I don't know what else. Like, you know, their morale is in the toilet after a series of, I'm sure, you know, I haven't watched them, but I'm sure some of those draws were probably frustrating. They've lost all these games by one goal. They're probably frustrated, and they had a moment of low morale where it finally all bottled up and got to them, and they got killed. Like, it just, I don't know, something about it, I was like, are you kind of yelling at the fat kid to climb the rope here? Like, poor kid. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's part of it with me. And like, just, I guess kind of generally, it's not a bad thing, but it is a bit of a weird optic to see a guy with seemingly no football background. Now, I don't know that. I'm just going to assume that for this conversation, being that he came out of the stands, like a guy with no football background, just like lashing into players and coaches. It's like there's something like weird about that to me.
I mean, you don't need a football background to be able to assess effort.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that probably is what he was doing. Now, for what I did like about it, I don't want to repeat things you said, but pretty much it's what you said. In an era where the separation between players and fans is growing by the year, but like this can still happen in Germany where players are being held accountable to the fans directly and listen to them without interruption over after a terrible performance. Like there is something as a fan, like I'm only a fan. I have no background either. The number of times I've wanted to do this in my life, I basically did it on this podcast last year when I did a solo pod after Tottenham had a similar performance against Newcastle. Like I came on the podcast and I did that. Like, so there is something refreshing to me about that this can still happen in this day and age where a team is held directly accountable to its fans, to the people who have spent money, have spent emotional money, which you can't always put a price on. You know, like I do kind of find that refreshing. There's something kind of, you know, that's lost in this world now where there's just like players and fans are not, they don't interact. Like it's, you know, I kind of like that. And by the way, I have a feeling that if Darmstadt were to stay up or, you know, they would probably be treated as heroes because there's a connection between the fans and players that is unique that this can happen.
Listen, I far prefer this to Aston Villa. Who was it? It was 2015, 2016.
Julian Lescott.
They get they put in a terrible performance. I think they just barely scraped by Wickham or someone in the cup. They're going down. The away fans are there and they're vocal with them. And like the Villa players, none of the Villa players would front up and go over to them and, you know, have any like, too afraid to engage with their own supporters who like you said, spend all the money, make the effort. And then Julian Lescott gets abused, or gets told exactly what people thought of him, and he tweets out a picture of his car.
Right.
So, one of the comments here, I think this is over the top. I know fans pay to go and watch and support their team, but at the end, the fans have the option not to support if the product is not good. This is their lives, man.
I mean, like
their club, like the product. Oh, that gave me the ugh.
I mean, that I guess that product. Varies. That varies person to person. There is no scenario in my life where I stop supporting the Eagles or Tottenham or like it's they're part of my life.
Right.
Now you could say, well, that's foolish on you, and that doesn't give you the right. But to ask people to just stop supporting the team because they're not good enough, come on, like that's.
But also to treat it like
it's part of their life.
Also to treat it like you're going to the movies to watch the latest blockbuster. Well, I went in, I left halfway. I didn't think it was that good. Oh, it's right. Not like that. It's so much more. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. I thought the responses from our listeners were a little bit like it was overwhelmingly. This is insane. This is mental. This shouldn't happen.
Well, it's so foreign to
yeah,
us.
It's and
for
that's
that
the,
to be allowed but, to happen.
But that's the point. Like the fans have just been absolutely treated with such little respect in this country for years across all sports. Tomorrow morning, you could wake up and your team's gone from your town. The hub of your community, the thing you love so much, can be just taken away from you like that. And you have to eat it. There's nothing you can do about it. The Rams, the Colts, even look at what
Browns,
happened.
Browns, it happens all
Columbus
the time.
Columbus Crew, they had to create a grassroots movement to keep their football club. It was going off to Austin, how little the owner cared. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anyway.
Totally
interesting.
Yeah, I'm good with that. Let's see a couple of things on the home front. JJ, speaking of MLS, a few notable results from over the weekend. In the Inter Miami show, it was on full display Saturday night. If you paid for a ticket for that game, you got your money's worth. I don't know what they're charging, but you were hoping for that. Messi and Suarez both score a couple goals. 5-0 is the final over an Orlando City team that we think is decent.
I love the two Suarez goals. The first one, the cutback from Robert Taylor, was it from Robert Taylor?
No, it was from Gressel.
Gressel, who I think is a good pickup.
Sure,
Suarez just flashes it home, and then the next goal is such a Suarezian goal, if there can be such a thing where he just 1-2 bundles through, and then this out of nowhere pulls out this side foot finish. It's such a smooth and clever finish. But Andrew. Particularly the Messi goal where he's been pulled back and he just lets the ball go over the line.
Yeah.
That, I would say that performance by Orlando, that general 5-0, that whole aura, that's terrible for the league. For anyone who's watching outside, that was disgraceful. Orlando were a disgrace. If you're one of those people who hate on MLS from abroad and American soccer from abroad, that's giving you everything. That the league looked a joke from that game. I kind of, what were Orlando doing?
I can't say this was my takeaway from it. I think Inter Miami are the best team in the league.
So the ball's about to be cleared off the line. The guy, one of the defenders comes back, boots it up into the air, hits off the underside of the crossbar, comes down. Messi is just about to like walk it into the net. The goalkeeper runs across. I don't know what he's doing, but you can use your hands. Like it's just a complete defensive footballing mess. Just visually, it looked so amateur and so bad. It looked like an exhibition game Suarez and Messi were playing in. Orlando were a disgrace.
If you're going to lose 5-0, takes two for a result like that to happen. Suarez, of course, one of the league's great question marks this season. 2 goals, 2 assists. Spectacular display.
Yeah, I mean, he needed it. He really did. There were so many doubts coming into this game about his physical well-being. I'm not sure they've been entirely answered. We need to see him over a stretch of months. But that was a very good performance, and it was kind of a throwback performance. Maybe he's got a few left in the tank.
Of course he does.
He just did it.
You're
convinced, and if the defending is going to be that amenable for the rest of the season, then he's going to look great, definitely.
Speaking of Gressel, Miami, Inter Miami shipped off DeAndre Yedlin to FC Cincinnati.
So many funny tweets about this one. Because the photo that's been doing the rounds the last few weeks is DeAndre Yedlin, captain of Inter Miami, giving a speech in the huddle to Busquets and to Messi and Alba and Suarez. Yeah. It's just so funny. And someone tweeted, Messi wasn't taking any more of these team talks, so he got rid.
But it's a notable move. Again, it's the captain of a team that we think could be the best team in the league. What do you want to put?
How is he feeling?
Well, it's not like they send him to Siberia. Like FC Cincinnati might, if Inter Miami aren't the best team in the league, it might be because FC Cincinnati are.
I know, man, but think of the context. He's playing with some of the greatest players we've ever seen. He's doing it in Miami. He's front and center every single game because of who he's playing for. You're getting moved.
But he'll never be front and center.
But come on. By, I know Robert Taylor's name because of those around him. Come on. I know. Like, that is a fact. You are risen up by
yes, association. That is all true. But Yedlin, this season didn't just become a lost cause for him. I mean, FC Cincinnati are pretty interesting with you know. I guess he'll be a wing back there.
I would say he's absolutely fuming.
My guess is he probably had a sense that this was possible. I mean, we were talking about this with Tom Bogert a few weeks ago of like, you know, to make financials work. You know, maybe some things were going to have to happen. He became expendable because, look, Julian Gressel has done well playing in midfield, but you can just as his natural position was right back. You can move him back there. And then who was it? Federico Redondo that they brought in, who is still getting, I guess, his visas worked out, but he can be moved into the midfield. So like this made sense, I suppose you would say. But yeah, so Gressel's an interesting one.
I think every good team
of like the last 5 years, he's been on them.
He's very underrated.
Yeah.
I think he's a nice player. Very nice player.
Let's see. Maybe the wildest game of the weekend was in Utah as Real Salt Lake took down LAFC in a full on blizzard.
Should they have played that game?
So they started it. It's a very weird thing. They start the game and the field is fine. Like nothing's wrong. But I guess there was thunder. Or lightning. So the referee stops it. And when they come back to resume, the field is covered in snow. It's just like this thing blew in the blink of an eye and did that. I am okay with them playing the game.
Because it was fun. But I say Hugo Lloris was expecting to be. I am going to be home and in my hotel within 15 minutes.
I was wondering what he must have been thinking.
I mean, he didn't see one of the goals.
His hair is covered in a layer of snow. Like, it's very strange because we all love a good weather game in any sport. Soccer, maybe not baseball. Baseball, you don't need that. But soccer and football, we love weather having... Like, those games are really highly rated games.
Yeah.
But does it ever enhance... like what you're actually seeing from a level of play standpoint? Like,
no,
the ball was barely moving. the ball would, you could only pass it a few feet before like the snow would stop it.
I'll never forget Roy Keane when he was manager at Ipswich against Leicester City, Sven Göran Eriksson's Leicester City. And it had snowed a little bit before the game, but it was exactly like this. The snow really started cascading down at Portman Road. And Ipswich were leading 2-0 at the time. There was a conversation. And Keane was just adamant this game is going to get played because they couldn't win a game at the time. They were drawing loads of games. And I watched it and I'm like, this is fun. This game should not be happening though.
Yeah, I guess it is kind of a mockery. Like,
I honestly think on one of the goals, Lloris like didn't see it.
Yeah, because like, the second goal, I could barely see it.
The side foot. Yeah, I don't think he could see it.
I don't know if anyone did. However, the other side of this coin is that, look, both teams are playing in the same conditions. One of them scored three goals. The other one didn't score any.
Ultimately, I'm okay with it. And differing conditions.
I think Steve Cherundolo was not happy about it.
Well,
if they had won, beaten. It probably would have felt different.
Exactly. Exactly. Then, yeah. If they'd won, this would have been the conversation. Well, we, you know, all credit to the guys. We fought through the elements, got the 3 points, happy to go home with the 3 points in the bag.
Character
builder, et cetera, et cetera. You lose, it's, we've got to, you know, I was surprised we went ahead with this game, the difficult conditions, yada, 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 yada.
Boy, replacement refs they've been put through the ringer a little bit, which leads me, I guess, to replacement ref watch. I don't know if you saw it, JJ, but
I didn't see this one. You're gonna have to talk me through it.
They wasn't altogether that different, to be honest, than what happened in the Liverpool Nottingham Forest game. The Union were in this case, the Union were down a goal at Sporting Kansas City late. And there's a throw, like the Union are kind of dribbling up the far side of the field. And it goes out of play. And it, I think everyone could see it was off Philadelphia. It should have been a Sporting Kansas City throw in. And for the linesman was looking away because he was looking upfield to see if there was an offside, I guess. The referee just, I don't know, got it wrong, didn't see it right, and gave Philly the throw. You could see it's one of those situations where it felt like everyone in the stadium knew the right call except for the only person who needed to know it. Like all the fans right where it happened, they all went crazy. They all stood up and were screaming. The players, I think, were probably a little surprised. And then the Union off that throw, they go up, they wound up winning. Again, the phase of play, like it's a similar situation in that I think they wound up getting a corner and then Bedoya scores to equalize deep in stoppage time. But it all started with the throw in being handed to the wrong team. So
remember we had Jeff Reuter on the pod.
Yeah.
Jeff has an article from yesterday. MLS instructed broadcasters to not belabor referee commentary amid lockout. MLS sent memos to TV and radio broadcasters this weekend not to belabor the point when addressing the lockout between the Professional Soccer Referees Association, the PSRA, and Professional Referee Organization, PRO, according to a memo obtained by The Athletic and verified by multiple sources familiar with MLS broadcast operations. Fans tune in to watch and listen to the game, the memo read in part. They aren't focused on the officials. Therefore, we don't believe it is necessary to belabor the point during the match. It is best to mention the situation in the pregame and move on.
Boy, I'll tell you this right now. There is probably some people at MLS that are effing furious that that memo was allowed to be leaked by somebody at Apple.
Oh, like, my God.
This is your partner who you're trying to, like, build this thing with, and they leak that. It's not a great look.
The memo included example language on how to describe situations, including the lack of in-stadium in-broadcast VAR announcements, the implementation of which is among the new officiating initiatives, with rollouts that have been delayed due to the lockout. Commentators were also told they were welcome to agree or disagree with any controversial calls, but the memo stressed to not imply that the replacement referees were the reason for the controversial call. This is really... this is state-run media stuff, isn't it? This is kind of MLS Pravda. It's not good.
No, it's not great. Good. Not a great look that memo leaked.
And you know, there's been like... with the whole U.S. soccer... US Open Cup, MLS debacle, there's been people you know, who are like, where's one of our great voices? Where's our what would you call it? Our man who, what are we doing? Where's the great town crier of US soccer? He's been very, very quiet. That's Taylor Twellman. I'm not accusing them of anything, but I'm saying it's probably hard to be fully able to speak your mind when it's set up this way, between when the merger with Apple and merger, when the association between Apple and MLS is built like that.
Let's see, a couple things to close out on, JJ. The U.S. women beat Colombia 3-0 in the quarterfinals of the Gold Cup in a really, really strong performance. Now, Elisenaire did have some really impressive saves to make, but the team played well. And look, there have not, since the World Cup began, haven't been too many great days for this team. So a game where you win 3-0, and not only that, but it's like, it's a lot of new faces that you're starting to see. I think the U.S. started 5 women age 23 or under in this one. I saw this from OptiJack. Jaden Shaw, who scored the third, I believe, for the U.S. Jaden Shaw joins Shannon Box as the only players in U.S. women's national team history to score in each of their first 3 starts. I think Jaden Shaw is 19 years old.
Wow.
You know, Jenna Nyswanger, the reigning NWSL Rookie of the Year, she came on and scored a goal in this one for the U.S. Like, that's good. You know, that's the thing that we worried about is like, okay, like, the next generation of American talent. We need, they've got to be up for this, because this is like, we see how much more difficult it's gotten. And you see some early signs that yes, they still, we can still produce some great players that maybe just need the kind of coaching that Emma Hayes is going to bring to this.
The Emma Hayes era can't happen quickly enough. And I know it's contractually, she has to finish her season out with Chelsea, but you know, Colombia dominated possession. I'd say dominated. They had 56% more dead to the US's 44, you know.
Well, when you're up 3-0, I mean, that was the score. The US made it 3-0. What was it, still the first half?
They made it 3-0. Yeah, 45 plus two. So, like, so I guess maybe that's part of it.
You're obviously going to like seed some of the, that's a whole half where you've got a 3-goal lead. You're not going to see a ton of possession. Like, yeah, that's
the buzz I'm on with this team is like seeing signs of them like develop. And part of that is like being a team that really kind of, I don't know, dominates.
I mean, look, go win this tournament. Like that, yeah. If
right,
you want
right.
to, like, this is only one game, but I'm just saying, like, Jaden Shaw, Jenna Nyswanger, like, young players coming on, scoring goals for them, that's, those are good signs.
Right.
And by the way, also, Katerina Macario came back for Chelsea over the weekend, and she scored a goal in her return from a torn ACL. So that's good, too. I mean, you know, who knows? Like, that was a player that they badly needed at the World Cup, and it's good to see her return, too. So yeah, we'll see. Hopefully they can finish the job as the U.S. now advance to the semifinals. And then finally, JJ, just a couple quick U.S. men's national team notes. Josh Sargent scores again for Norwich City, 6 goals in 6 games in the month of February, 11 goals total this season.
Can we talk about that goal?
Sure.
It's like such a, I mean, it's a decent ball in. He challenged him with two defenders. He gets up, takes it under control, and then swivels a volley and buries it into the Sunderland net. It's like a really, really good centre forwards goal. I know Hercules Gomez from Football America's ESPN, everything, is big on the Sargent hype trend. Like he believes he is the answer down the centrally, and is like, kind of when I said a few years ago, I thought he was the pick of the bunch. And then I maybe felt like I had to retract that a bit, but when he's fit, man, he's developing into some player. Like, he has so much to do. Anyway, get online. It's there. The highlights, Norwich Sunderland. 1-0 to Norwich. It's brilliant. Really, really good goal. Real striker, centre forward, old school kind of goal. He's really, really flying, Andrew.
He is. He really is.
There's decisions to be made here.
I know. We've been talking
and there's
about
an,
this.
There's an argument he links play better than either Balogun or Pepe or anyone else.
It'll be interesting to see what their Nations League rosters look like. If that could be an early sign of where Greg's head is at. I'll be curious about that. And then along those lines, Malik Tillman scores an amazing goal for PSV against Feyenoord, where he nutmegs a guy basically on his first touch and then kind of carves through a couple defenders and finishes brilliantly in a really big game. And look, this is probably, we're right at the end here. I don't know if this is for another day, but you start looking at the season he's having. Everyone at PSV is to the moon with the performance of this guy. He might be their player of the season on a team that looks like they're going to win the league and has been successful in Europe as well. And I just wonder, of all U.S. men's national team players this season in club league play, if we're talking about guys whose stock has gone up the most during the club season, I think it has to be him. As this move to PSV has been so good for him.
Yeah.
And look, if it's not him, it's probably somebody like some of these usual suspects, like Weston McKennie going from a terrible situation at Leeds when we're all kind of down on him to then going back to Juve and being having maybe the best year of his career. You know, so that has helped. But we already knew, like, Weston McKennie was already a first team sure thing starter for the U.S. anyway. Tillman is the one where I just wonder, like, so what does this mean now? Like, we assume that the midfield is kind of, we know what it is, and Tillman's not necessarily in their plans for first 11, but I don't know. This guy's having like a transcendent season. I wonder if it makes you have to, like, if you have to reshuffle things a little bit. We just were talking the other day to Nicky Bandini about Yunus Musa kind of struggling at AC Milan. If Tillman is flying the way that he is on the best club in the Dutch league, does it change some of the thinking on who's in that midfield? I know they're different positions, but you things can be altered in a way to make guys fit. I firmly believe that. I don't know.
Another question mark for Greggy. His first touch, takes it on his right, megs him with the left,
yeah,
and then just bursts into the gap that opens up in the Feyenoord defense, and it's a really nice finish. Slides it in under the goalkeeper. Great goal. Wow.
I mean, if you think from the start of the year to now, guys whose stock has gone up, I'd be curious to hear from the Animals or anyone on Twitter whose stock has gone up the most for the U.S. men's national team during club play this season. I think it's him. Find somebody who beats that.
I think you might be right.
Yeah. So there you go, JJ. That was a big one.
Good pod. Process.
I thought any disagreements we had, I thought was very civil.
It was. I'm ready for the pelters I'm going to get because, you know, look, we're all to some degree biased, but I genuinely feel that way about that Liverpool. I don't see it as a controversial goal at all. Just don't. And I'm sticking to that.
We will be back, of course, later this week with another
edition.
Hey,
are you okay? You're ill.
What do you mean?
You've done so well to get through this podcast.
I was never going to mention that because I've come to find, after many years of hearing different hosts say at the start of different shows, I'm so sick today. I think the only reason that's done is because those hosts want to excuse whatever bad performance. Yeah, whatever bad performance they might have. When in fact, I don't think this is going to sound really callous. I think our audience likes us a lot as guys. Like, I think that's, and they don't want me to be sick. But like, ultimately, when you turn on the pod, that's they want to get a good version of the podcast. So
yeah,
like,
yeah,
I wasn't going to say, I wasn't going to say that I was sick.
No, you've been ill, and you look. I don't know. You look okay.
Okay.
But you look quite pale.
Yeah. It has not been a fun 24 hours.
You look a little bit drawn, a little bit gaunt.
But hey.
Concerning. Just
got to show up and
do
the job.
No, you did show up. And I want to give you credit for it because you're a trooper, man. I respect you.
Well, that's very nice. We'll have another one of these later this week. Hopefully I'll be feeling better for that one. JJ, I enjoyed this. I enjoyed this quite a bit. To you, I say.
Get better, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.